You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 82, Where's My Touch ID? Today, it's all about iPhone 8. The two leaked designs, one the most likely surefire one that Apple will be going for, and the second one, a plan B, with a relocation of the Touch ID sensor to a not-so-popular location that some Android phones tend to use. We talk about that and more coming up next on The Impromptu. When everything is broken.
So, unlike last week with that particularly clever April Fool's joke of an iPhone 8 schematic, we now have an apparently actual iPhone 8 schematic. However, the notable thing about this schematic is that it is EVT3, meaning it is not a production schematic. It's essentially a prototype that has not made it to manufacturing. And it appears to primarily focus on the back chassis of the phone. The front is deliberately low fidelity compared to the back. And it has been independently confirmed that this is, in fact, the backup design. And I'll get to why in a moment. But the schematic basically presents a phone that is slightly bigger than the iPhone 7, with beveled edges resembling the iPhone 5. So you've got kind of a strip around the edge of the phone that then leads into an angled curved edge that then leads to a flat back. And the antenna lines are where they are on the 7 at the top and bottom, a thin strip that you can barely see. And the front of the phone is essentially all screen. No home button, just barely enough space for the earpiece and the front camera at the top, with an equal amount of space at the bottom, with apparently nothing there. And on the back, the dual lens camera, only it's in a vertical configuration instead of a horizontal configuration. So it's essentially the back of the 7 Plus, except the dual lens camera has been tilted 90 degrees. And then in the center, and this is why it's definitely the backup design, in the center of the back of the phone is a Touch ID button. So this is basically Apple's plan B. The plan A is to put Touch ID into the display on the front directly so that you can press your finger anywhere on the screen and it will unlock the phone.
Which, of course, we prophesized, if you will, before.
Yes, many times. Many, many times. Essentially, the design with the Touch ID sensor on the back is if Apple isn't able to manufacture the screen with Touch ID built into it at the correct yield. However, Apple has a streak of never needing to use the backup design, ever. Case in point, there was a backup design of the 7 Plus that did not include the dual lens camera. However, obviously, they did not go with that. There have been others in the past. there was, I believe, with the two-tone flash, there was a model that didn't have it. With Touch ID, there was a model that didn't have it. Every major new hardware edition, there is always a backup design where they create a compromise if they can't get something to work. But they have always gotten those things to work. So we have never seen an iPhone where they actually failed to manufacture something that they wanted to build. So I think it's highly unlikely that we'll see this schematic unveiled in September. And in fact, we will be seeing the real design of the iPhone 8, which is to say, a phone where essentially the entire front is a screen. And the so on the schematic, there are a few things that I think are real, like that will make it into the final design. The vertical dual lens camera, that's definitely in, because the camera on the back internally takes up almost the entire height of the phone. So in order to make room for all the other sensors at the top of the phone, because if you're increasing the size of the display, you're reducing the available area for the front camera and the other sensors that are on the front. And there will be more sensors if the phone, in fact, has a true tone display like the iPad Pro. So in order to make room for all of that and the rumored 3D sensor, tilting the camera 90 degrees makes perfect sense, because then you're freeing up all this space next to it where the other lens would have been. And you have all that space free for other sensors and other camera units and that sort of thing. So it makes a lot of sense that they would choose to do that, just in terms of saving space and kind of reconfiguring the internals to fit everything in.
Everything about the mock-up for what supposedly is the primary design that they want to go with, everything makes sense. It seems completely plausible. And you know how this is with every year, you know, rinse and repeat with the Apple rumor mill and quote-unquote leaked designs that come out. And of course, people make their own mock-ups of what they feel they want the iPhone to look like. And oftentimes they're either far off base or relatively reasonable to what Apple might do. But this one, for me, in the longest time, I haven't really seen a mock-up for a design for a future unreleased iPhone that looked like pretty much spot on, that based on all the information that we've had, that people have been reporting, that we've talked about, it seems like exactly like what we get, or it seems like exactly what we would get in September.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much spot on. It's probably the closest that we're going to get in terms of what it actually looks like until the day. I don't think any parts for this are going to leak, at least not any that reveal the truth of the device. They'll be keeping a very tight lid on that, particularly the front of the phone. Like,
right.
Those display panels will not leak. They will keep them very tightly controlled.
I guess what I'm somewhat, and I'm just preparing myself for this, that there's not going to be anything surprising in September.
Well,
the iPhone 8.
I think the big surprise will be the 3D sensors and what they do with augmented reality. Plus, there's a lot of unanswered questions about, well, now that we have this OLED display, is iOS going to take advantage of it? Are we going to get an always-on lock screen? Are we going to get notifications that just come in and that's all that's rendered on the screen, like kind of ghost floating notifications that use very little power because the rest of the screen is turned off? Like, are we going to see these things? Is it going to take another year for them to kind of work on that stuff, or have they already thought of it all? And then, of course, there's all the other stuff that iOS needs to deliver on. So you've got all that, and then you've got this. So, I mean, with this hardware, what else is it going to be able to do? What can they do with the new A11 chip? What new features are going to be unlocked because of that additional processing power? Because there's always something.
Yes.
And I mean, a lot of that could be the AR functionality, but it could also be tiny little details like additional camera functionality. The 3D sensor might allow for like variable depth mapping where you can, there was a rumor last year for the 7 that you would be able to take a photo and it would kind of make a 3D image out of it using the two lenses to create kind of a 3D effect. They could actually do that this year because the new chip lets it render that stuff in real time. And the 3D sensor can aid in that as well.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think they want people to know about this design. That's why we've heard so much information about it. That's why all of this, like, it's not quite concrete evidence, but there's a lot of sources out there. There's a lot of people that are kind of whispering these things out in the ether that are really easy to pick up on if you keep an eye out for it, like I do.
But that's really the antithesis of Apple's modus operandi about doubling down on security, and they don't
want...
I'm not going to say that they... Like, I really don't believe that they purposefully leak anything. However,
do.
That doesn't mean that they care all that much about the stuff that does get leaked.
Yeah.
Because in a way, at least for the tech elite and the people that report on this stuff, I guess one way of looking at it is that it keeps them kind of happy that they know what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before on the show, and I'm of the position that Apple intentionally leaks all of these things as part of a controlled narrative.
So you're gonna stick to your guns on that.
I am sticking to my guns.
Okay. Well, I will.
Everything that comes out is usually part of the controlled
narrative.
I won't
fight you on that, but I want to make it very clear that I don't believe that at all.
Some stuff does leak accidentally, of course. There are those times where somebody slips a part out of the factory.
Okay.
Sure, that happens. But I'm talking about a schematic just happening to get out of a computer, or the New York Times hearing from a source familiar with the matter. All of these things are tightly controlled by Apple PR.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so
let's not linger on that stuff.
What I want to get at there, though, is that they have been feeding these tidbits out there because they want people to know that this phone is a big deal. They want people to know that this is going to be the biggest iPhone launch in years, so that when that day comes, when they unveil it, yeah, we pretty much know a lot of what it's going to be. But at the same time, it's that incredible of a device that people that didn't know, their jaws are going to hit the floor.
Yes.
And Apple is going to see the best quarter that anyone has ever seen in all of history.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. It remains to be seen. But just on a related and somewhat related tangent from the last couple of episodes here talking about the Mac Pro, everyone listening to this podcast that is interested in Apple products probably already knows that so many people are upset about the Mac Pro because, again, 3.5 years, you know,
yeah,
with no updates. Can you imagine, though, if since 2013, what's happening now with iPhone information that gets leaked out, can you imagine if stuff trickled out about this quote-unquote modular Mac Pro? Maybe that backlash, maybe the anger wouldn't have been there, because we would have at least been like hopeful that, oh yes, they haven't abandoned the platform. They're still working on it. Look at all these, you know, leaks that have come out about new designs.
Yeah. Well, the thing there is that the iPhone is the moneymaker.
Yes.
Everything is
one,
about
the big
iPhone.
Moneymaker. Yeah.
and the media narrative that they control, it's always iPhone related because iPhone purchases are tied to contract cycles. And so they want to front load all of that stuff so that people are aware and they know. Don't get another phone. Wait until this because you're going to want to upgrade.
One thing I wanted to pick your brain about, going back to the primary design supposed leak that came out. I noticed that it's in jet black.
Yes.
And one of the things that you and I have talked about, perhaps off the air, but we talked about how the jet black iPhone 7 last year was incredibly popular, and Apple couldn't make enough of them fast enough to fulfill the demand that was there. But we talked about how superior the jet black will be this year with the combination of that seamless, you know, edge-to-edge glass display with that OLED technology, which will basically make the front of the phone look like a black abyss when it's not, you know, when the dark parts of the screen are on, it's going to look gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. And, like, just imagine a notification floating over the screen. Like, if iOS actually supports stuff like that, imagine the phone is just sitting there, this seamless, shiny black object, and then suddenly this little thing just kind of fades in and floats across the top of
the iPhone phone. 8 hardware won't surprise us all that much, but I think what will surprise us in a couple of months with WWDC is a lot of UI touches to iOS 11, like you're saying, to accommodate the features that they can accomplish with that new screen.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing, though, because a lot of the time they obfuscate stuff until the new hardware is out. Like, they don't want to, they tip their hand, but they never tip their hand that much. So it's going to be interesting to see what they actually do announce, because if they announce, oh, we have a new lock screen with these things that just kind of come up all the time, that's going to give the game away.
Yeah. But they would only work on the OLED screen, though, wouldn't they?
The thing is, they could do it on... Actually, no. They would have to actually lock that out, because if you did it on the LED screen, the battery would drain in, like, no time at all. So that would be an iPhone 8 only feature. Something that they could hide... that developers aren't going to see in the code. And then when the 8 comes out, they're just like, oh yeah, all of this stuff was in here the whole time. What they won't be able to hide is something like a dark mode. So in order for the iPhone 8 to have optimal battery efficiency, they need to have more dark things on the screen at all times so that pixels aren't being lit up.
And in order to dark mode on apps, maybe?
Yeah. In order to accomplish that, iOS needs a dark mode. And they can't just announce that out of the blue in September. They have to announce it in June so that developers can add support for it to their apps. So that they have to announce if they're going to do it. There's probably also a bunch of things about... new UI tweaks. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure all of this stuff will be with a wink and a nudge. Because they know
they
we're not dumb. They know what we know.
Yeah. I mean, they never in so many words say it, but they usually say things like, you'll want to be using this, which is what they did with auto layout before the new larger 4.7-inch iPhone came out in June. They were like, you're going to want to use auto layout. Which was basically telegraphing that there would be new screen sizes and new resolutions.
Right, too. That's pretty much how they say it.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll want to be using this, everybody. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, they do that wink and a nudge dance every year in June.
Oh, of course.
And between June and September, people always find, like, stuff hidden in there. Like, there's a few devs on Twitter that always find this stuff. And they usually get active around the time that the new iOS beta seeds come out. And they're like, oh, yeah, and we found this in there and we found this in there. And it's just like, oh, yeah, so they're going to have that. That explains a lot. Like, there's always moments like that throughout the few months between June and September.
I'm greatly concerned these people are spending so much of their free time trying to find Easter eggs in code. I guess if you get a kick out of it.
Like,
I mean, you are doing the community a service.
You
that's
are.
For sure.
And it's like, it's not so much an Easter egg as, I've found the secret treasure that reveals what Apple is planning to do, which can be incredibly valuable because if you're developing, it's a game. And if you're developing apps, it can help to know what the new iPhone is going to be able to do. So if you can find those hooks in the code and go, oh, so that's going to be happening, then you kind of know what to prepare ahead of time. Even if you don't have access to the API yet, you can kind of guess at what you're going to have to do in order to support it. I mean, they're not going to give the whole game away because they never do, but wherever they have to add something in order for developers to be able to support it in time for September, they're going to have to announce that stuff. Dark mode is one example. I don't know what else they would have to include, but hopefully as part of the iPad stuff, they also start rethinking what the UI on the iPhone should look like. Because, I mean, that hasn't changed in years either. And I think it's probably due for a refresh.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And
due for
one thing they could do on an OLED screen, particularly an edge-to-edge OLED screen, particularly a rounded corner edge-to-edge screen, is redesign the app UI so that apps kind of become cards, like in what used to be WebOS. Palm's mobile operating system, all of the apps in WebOS were cards that you could swipe away or bring in. And like the edge around the card was always accessible for multitasking options. So with this large edge-to-edge rounded OLED screen, that could be a possible option.
Sure.
There have also been rumors that the entire bottom of the phone display will be essentially a touch bar with contextual options.
Yeah, we've talked about that
That's
before.
Also a possibility.
I hope we do see that.
I think that would be pretty
cool. Yeah, it would
It makes
be a cool
more
feature.
Sense on the iPhone and the iPad than it does on the Mac.
Yeah.
So I could see that being a thing.
No, I'm concerned about these rumors that because they want it to be the Pro iPhone, that they will increase the price of what is already an insanely expensive phone. They need to tread carefully there because I think that would be a mistake. I think the iPhone 8 should just be what the current iPhone 7 Plus costs.
It's going to depend.
Because would they keep the iPhone 7 Plus in the lineup?
Yes.
That doesn't make sense to me.
So here's what I see happening. There's rumors about a 7S. Forget those. It's not happening. Apple placed an order with Samsung for 70 million OLED panels. You do not place an order for that many panels. That's how many iPhones they sell in a quarter. That's not the order you place if 40% of the September shipment is going to be this model of iPhone.
No, they expect people to be buying this.
They want people to buy this phone. But the thing is, that number, that means every iPhone is going to be this iPhone. Meaning the iPhone 8 is the only new iPhone that will be shipping in September. There is no 7S. There is no other iPhone.
Help me clarify this. So you're saying that they're going to stick to this model then of iPhone 8, smaller size iPhone 8 Plus with the larger screen?
No.
Or are you
there
saying
is
iPhone
only
8
one
will be
iPhone 8.
The 5.8
5.8 inch,
yeah,
slightly bigger than the 7. That is the only iPhone and moving forward.
Then they keep the iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus at a lower price.
Yes.
That makes sense. So, but if that, going on that logic, would they not, could they not keep the iPhone 8 at the regular price that an iPhone 7 Plus is and just make the others cheaper?
That's possible, but it's going to depend on the bill of materials.
Right.
Because OLED costs more, and if they're putting in 3D sensors for AR,
so you're
that's
saying
Apple
won't want to, why for them as a business, it wouldn't make sense for them to take a hit on the margin to keep it at the same price. But it is a risky move, though, to increase the price.
They might take a slight hit on the margin just to keep the price point kind of stable. Like, I don't see it a little, but not
yeah, to the point where people are like, oh, it's an extra $200.
Yeah, I don't see it being incredibly more expensive than the 7 Plus. I mean, this technology is next
generation. The cost of parts. I mean, what it cost them to make this, like on a grand scale, on that scale, right? I don't know what the bill of materials are, but I'm sure it's absolutely nowhere near what they charge. There's a massive markup on
there is markup, for sure. But with these components, especially the 3D sensors, like this stuff is cutting edge tech. And the panel is going to be dramatically more expensive this time around because A, it's an OLED panel and OLED costs way more. B, they're putting Touch ID directly into the panel, which probably involves a bunch of miniaturized circuitry that's built directly into the panel, along with additional cables and microcontrollers and all of that stuff going on.
This all sounds like stuff that would be draining more battery life.
And yeah,
now it is a bigger device, slightly. They could fit more battery, but that's a concern of mine. Is OLED more efficient than the current LCD tech that's in iPhone?
It's dramatically more efficient. Okay. So I mean,
so that's somehow maybe balancing it out.
As I was saying, like, any pixel that's black is literally off. So the more black pixels you have, the more battery you're saving. So that's why dark mode makes sense for this phone. Additionally, the A11 chip will be 10 nanometers. It's going to be a die shrink. So not only will it be faster, it'll also be more energy efficient, meaning it'll drain less power, meaning the battery will last longer. So I am going to guess that even with all the bells and whistles they're adding to this phone, the fact that it's a size between the 7 and 7 Plus, and the fact that it's an OLED screen, and the fact that the CPU is a die shrink, the battery life is basically going to be comparable to the 7 Plus. And because the Lightning cable is going to be upgraded to USB-C this year, we're going to have fast charging. So not only is it going to have 7 Plus battery life, but you're going to be able to charge it back up to like 50% in 15 minutes.
No, wait a minute.
Or less.
What happened to this whole wireless charging thing? I thought that was finally happening this
year. So that's probably going to happen too, but obviously wireless charging is slower.
Sure. So you'll have an either or.
Yeah. So wireless charging, sure, you can put it on the mat and it'll slowly charge back up. But if you want to charge it quickly, the new USB 3 Lightning port will enable the iPhone to be charged really quickly.
So kind of like the Apple Pencil, how...
Yes.
You get
The Beats headphones.
And the Beats headphones, right. Now, actually, was the Apple Pencil internally, was that... Did we ever find out if that was using USB-C? It's a Lightning connector, but I don't know if it was.
I don't believe so.
I don't know what magic they worked behind the scenes to make that happen.
I think they just had a voltage thing where it could quickly fill
the
battery.
And the new Magic Mouse does the quick charging. Or maybe I was getting confused.
No.
I know it's the Magic Mouse. If you charge it for, God, what a... I can't even quote the numbers. It's like, and then you get like 30 minutes of battery life.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, that's a bit slower. I would say the comparable thing is the new Beats Solo 3 headphones. So that's not even Lightning. It's micro USB. But because of the fast charging...
They're still using micro USB on those?
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of surprised.
Because of the fast charging in them, you can get an hour of listening time in 5 minutes of charging, or 2 hours, actually. I think it's 2 hours. 2 hours of listening time for being plugged in for 5 minutes. So add that to the iPhone, and it's like, oh, well, battery life's not really a concern anymore because you can just top up like 25% in 5 minutes. You just plug it in for a little bit and boom, you can keep going for half a day.
Yeah, that would be nice.
It's not even going to matter at that point. So yeah, it's going to have wireless charging, but yeah, you'll be able to do both depending on the situation. I mean, if you're at home, yeah, you can just leave it on whatever they're going to have for it.
As a novelty, it's cool, but if we do get fast charging, I would probably just end up using that all the time, right? Because why would you?
Exactly.
It's not that big of a deal. If it doesn't take that long to get a decent charge out of the phone, just plug it in.
Yeah. In fact, like, I think the wireless charging is kind of up in the air, really. Like, if they have fast charging, it's almost...
I don't see the point in even doing wireless. Yeah, why?
Yeah.
It's inferior.
The only reason I could see them doing it is that they want the iPhone to be untethered. They want to be able to just have the iPhone on its own and it can charge, but you don't need to plug it in. It can just kind of sit there and pick up power. But that's dependent on what wireless tech they use. If it's a charge mat, really, you're just moving the cable down the line. But if they've actually partnered with that company, Energys, and it's an electromagnetic field that charges the phone from a distance, that could be really interesting. Because then you've got this base station, and as long as your iPhone is near it, it charges, which would be crazy because that doesn't exist beyond tech demos.
Right. My gut tells me that Apple won't do wireless charging this year and that they wouldn't do it until they could get it to the point where wireless charging charges as fast as this, how it would charge on over USB-C.
Yeah.
Because again, like, why have ways of charging a device if one method is superior?
I don't think it'll ever be as fast just because of the limitations of physics. Like,
right,
you can't push electrons through the air.
But to get it to a point where, you know,
I mean, you could get it close, but we'd still be talking a difference of like half an hour to an hour. Like, you could get it close, but it would never quite be close enough just because of physics. You can't push power through the air as quickly as you can push it through a wire. It just doesn't work because air is a really bad conductor.
Yeah, well, and this reminds me of the whole move to wireless headphones as well with the AirPods, where, yes, we can find flaws in the product, but in comparison to how wireless headphones worked before, it's now at the point where it is good enough so Apple shipped the product. And that's what makes me think too about like wireless charging. Yes, it will possibly, unless there's some radical scientific breakthrough in how we can charge wirelessly, you know, they may get it to the, once they get it to the point where it can charge reasonably fast, then it's like, okay, here it is.
Yeah. And I mean, that could be the partnership with this company, but just based on the way they've talked about wireless charging, I feel like it's, of all the rumors about the new iPhone, I would say wireless charging is the most
dubious
out there one. Like, I'd put it at 7 to 1 that it actually has wireless charging. Because it's like, if they do include it now, it's, like we said, not going to be as good as the fast charging. So most people just wouldn't even bother with it. So it has to either offer something, like maybe it has nightstand mode like the Apple Watch. That could be a possibility. Or it has the EM field charging where you just put it near the thing and it charges. Even if it doesn't charge quickly, that's pretty cool because you can just kind of walk around with your phone and it's still charging. So, I mean, like, depending on the range, you could be sitting in your living room and walk around your living room and go to your desk and back, and the phone is still charging, even though you're just walking around your house. So, I mean, if it has a range like that, it doesn't necessarily matter how fast it is because you're getting a constant charge no matter what. So, I mean, if they have the capability to do that, I could see that being the feature. But I feel like that's at least a year out.
Hello, this is Alex Knight from Hologram Radio here to tell you about a fun new podcast that we recently launched called Serial Sommelier. Each week, David Kahlo and a guest select a random episode of a much beloved 1970s and 1980s Saturday morning cartoon series, review the episode, have some laughs, and of course, pair the perfect sugar cereal with it. Subscribe to Serial Sommelier today in iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and of course, wherever you can find your favorite podcasts. So this Plan B design that's being released, there's a good chance this will not see the light of day, I assume, because that rear touch ID sensor seems very...
It's disgusting.
It's not great. Nobody really wants
it's that. It's horrible. Like, I have tried Android phones with the fingerprint sensor on the back. It is awful. Like,
now, why is it so awful?
Well,
does it just feel unnatural?
It's not that it's unnatural. It's that the placement is just very awkward for several reasons. One, you can't see where you're putting your finger. So inevitably, even with muscle memory, there's still going to be a half second of, oh, where is it? Oh, right, there it is. And at first, you're going to have difficulty finding it because it's different on every phone. Like every Android phone, you look at it, and each one where they've put the sensor on the back, it's in a different place. So you can't even go from one phone to the other phone and trust that it'll be in the same place every
time. Yeah, you have to retrain
yourself.
There's
no standard. Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks. But I got to say, though, having the Touch ID sensor on the front of the iPhone on an iPhone Plus with the bigger screen, at times I find that it is a bit annoying because I do have to shift things around. Like, I don't have small hands, but having the Touch ID sensor there on that physical home button, it's not that great. And I think this will be a lot better in September because there will not be a physical home button. And if the Touch ID sensor is part of that portion of the screen there at the bottom, I think it'll be easier to reach and get it to engage without having to sort of shift your phone around.
In theory, it won't even be the lower part of the screen. It'll be the whole screen.
Right.
So you'll just put
even if it was,
you can just put your
strip,
thumb
though,
right in the center of the screen and it'll just be like,
right,
oh, there you go.
That is the ideal, but I'm saying if it is that whole strip at the bottom, that would be still better than just a tiny little circular button that you have to perfectly put your thumb on.
Yeah. I mean, any larger target area is going to be better than what they currently have, for sure. So then that brings me to the other reason why having it on the back is kind of stupid. So you're holding your phone, and chances are your thumb is right in front. And if you're using it with two hands, you kind of have access to most of your fingers. So with the Touch ID on the front, you can theoretically use any finger on either hand to unlock your phone. But if the sensor's on the back, really the only finger you can realistically use without it being awkward is your pointer finger, because that's the only finger that can actually reach the sensor and hit it. Because you've got your thumb kind of on the right edge of the phone or the left edge of the phone, depending on which hand you're holding it in, and your pinky finger and two index fingers next to that are on the other side of the phone. So you end up with your index finger free, or pointer finger. Sorry. I get fingers mixed up.
No, that's okay. But I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah. So your pointer finger is the only finger that ends up actually being free to move around on the back of the phone. So really, you only have two fingers that you can use to unlock your phone if the sensor's on the back. If it's on the front, you can theoretically use any finger. But on the back, two fingers.
Okay, so we both agree that the iPhone implementation is definitely the most comfortable.
Easily. And it will be even better once it's in the screen. And that actually brings me to the S8. I think we talked about this before, but the Samsung Galaxy S8, apparently they were trying to put the fingerprint sensor into the screen. But rather than delay the phone, they put it on the back as a last minute change. So the intent was always to put it in the display, but because they ran out of time, they said, ah, fuck it. Let's just put it on the back. And they put it in the worst possible place, directly next to the camera.
That makes zero sense.
Yeah. So
why couldn't they do it at least in the middle, like this Nexus 6P?
Yeah, or the Pixel phones.
Right.
And the best part, if you open the camera app on the S8, a disclaimer pops up warning you to wipe your camera because you might smudge it accessing the fingerprint reader.
I'm just shaking my head right now. That's just so bad.
The phrase, you're holding it wrong, comes to mind.
All because of the way you chose to design that.
Yeah. And even worse, the detection on the fingerprint reader, like in terms of finding it on the back of the phone. So it's all glass. It's all super glossy and slippery. The fingerprint sensor itself is barely cut into that glass. We're talking like 0.1 millimeters, something like that. So when you're feeling around on the back of that phone, it's like barely perceptible. Like you can kind of feel that it's there. Like I've held one and I tried to find the sensor and you can kind of feel it, but if you're in a hurry, you're not necessarily going to find it that easily. And so inevitably, because it's right next to the camera, your finger is going to brush over that camera when you're trying to find it. Every single time, probably. So, yeah, you're going to end up with a lot of blurry photos if you're not careful with that thing. So it's just a bad design. It's a bad UX choice. It limits the number of fingers you can use for biometric authentication.
I mean, at that point, they might as well put the Touch ID. I almost said Touch ID. Samsung might as well put have put the fingerprint reader into the camera lens. I mean, it's almost as bad.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway.
So, yeah. And really, that's because Samsung insists on putting the camera right in the middle of the phone. Like, that's another big thing that they get wrong.
Why is that wrong? Educate me.
Well, it's not necessarily wrong, but it's like if you're holding a phone, you don't really want the camera to be in a place where you can easily smudge it when you're holding it, right? So
I do like my smudge-free photos.
Yeah. So if the camera's on the edge, chances are your hand's not going to go near it because your hand's on the bottom half of the phone. So it's up there at the top and yeah, it's just not going to happen. But putting it closer to the bottom half of the phone, right in the middle, it's just a really bad placement potentially. Yeah. And they insist on doing it. And now it's really biting in the ass with the fingerprint sensor placement, because now you've got something that you actually want to touch on the back of the phone right near the camera. It's just it blows my mind that they actually signed off on that.
Did we leave anything out about the design leak mock-ups that came out?
I don't believe so. I think that pretty much covers it.
So basically
Sorry. The other thing, the power button is now apparently twice as long for some reason.
Ooh, that's interesting. Well, the phone is bigger.
Well,
you wouldn't have to reshift the phone around.
It's not bigger on the Plus, though. That's the thing.
True.
So there are multiple reasons this could be. A, it could be to achieve symmetry with the volume buttons. So if you look at the volume buttons, you see the height there.
Yeah, yeah.
If they made the power button taller, it would line up perfectly with both of those buttons.
Or maybe when you push, even though it's a long button, if you push the button to one side, maybe it does something different.
That's also possible.
AR, we talked about that AR dedicated button. Maybe it's one button, but you push
tilt
it to
it.
Tilt it to one side and it activates the AR.
The only thing with that is that could get awkward because you could have accidental activations.
Yes.
You're trying to lock your phone and you do the other thing by mistake. Apple doesn't usually go for that sort of thing.
Whatever it is, I'm sure there's a very good reason for it.
Probably.
Even if it's just symmetry, that's a very valid design choice, right?
I mean, the symmetry will look good. Plus, if the power button's bigger, you don't have to reach up higher to get to it.
Well, that's the practical nature of doing that, which I kind of like, actually, if anything.
Yeah. I mean, makes it easier. A bigger target to hit is always better. Yeah. So it should help make the phone more comfortable.
So to summarize, we have a really awesome phone coming in September, and obviously iOS 11 is going to have possibly some surprises, but some obviously UI touches that have to be done to accommodate that OLED display.
Yeah.
Even though we know Apple won't outright say it's because the iPhone 8 will have an OLED display. But like you said, with a wink and a nudge, they will encourage developers to take advantage of the new APIs and make whatever floating widgets or whatever they end up doing on the lock screen to showcase the fanciness of the new display.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of that, one thing I think they could actually do, if you have an Apple Watch, you've probably noticed there's a watch face with jellyfish and stuff that just kind of float in the middle of the screen.
Yes, I actually have that.
I could see Apple doing a lineup of live wallpapers that are basically the same thing for the lock screen. So like you tilt the phone up to wake it and it's just the whole screen is black except for like this one kind of floating animated thing that just kind of floats across the screen. It would be a really cool effect. Like, it looks cool on the watch, but it would look even better on the iPhone. Plus, they have all that room for stuff. Like, you could tilt the phone up and it could be like a jellyfish is just kind of floating there and the whole screen is black except for the time and the date and maybe the battery level. That would be nuts. Like, just seeing that. And as I've said multiple times, the reveal video is obviously going to lead up to one iconic shot where the phone slowly raises to wake and the whole front of the phone is just the screen. It's totally going to be that.
Yeah, it will. And it'll get a great reaction, I'm sure.
So yeah, that is basically the iPhone 8 as we know it currently. Obviously, any of this is subject to change based on further part leaks or analyst reports or sources familiar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is certainly the most accurate picture we have of the phone so far.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.